Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us live, everybody. It is your host, Jim Masters. A pleasure to have you here, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Close Up Radio as we continue our series. And now we kick off our December month-long additional series and set of shows as we continue our conversations with Dr. Michael Armour. For decades, Mike Armour, or Dr. Mike as he's popularly known, has compiled an exceptional leadership record in far-ranging fields of endeavor, which we've talked about here on the show. He's a multi-dimensional achiever and is consistently putting himself in demand. And that's what happens. You know, when you're good, you are in demand, and he's one of the best. Keynote speaker, executive coach, trainer focused on management, leadership, and business or cultural transformation. He's also recognized as an author. In fact, the second edition of his popular book just hit number one. That's right, number one in the business leadership category on Amazon.com. He holds a PhD from UCLA and has accumulated years of experience and wisdom in in-demand leadership roles that include service as a Navy captain, college president, the CEO of an international humanitarian organization, and the CIO of a nationwide intelligence community. And this is why his counsel is embraced by leaders in every sector, government, private practice, and nonprofit, many of them large matrix organizations. People who know Mike, well, rank him alongside executive coaches like Tony Robbins and Marshall Goldsmith. His flagship entity, Strategic Leadership Development International, or SLDI, and its Leader Perfect, those services are designed to help companies and individuals achieve peak performance. Throughout the conversation and throughout the month, you'll continue to hear more about the firm, comprehensive leadership development services, the book, and so much more. So we invite you to stay with us throughout the month. You'll also hear principles from his acclaimed book, Leadership and the Power of Trust, the new bestseller. Really exciting news. Let's welcome Dr. Mike Armour, live and direct from Dallas, Texas, as we kick off the December month together with a series of extraordinary shows coming up. Dr. Mike, welcome back to the show. It is a pleasure to have you with us. Congratulations on number one in the business leadership category on Amazon.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment, and I really enjoy being with you each week, so I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
I know that is really exciting news, and it's great to see that people have responded that way to the book, which I know for you has been a labor of toil and of love. So congratulations. On this episode, we're going to focus as we kick off the month together, why goal setting fails. And, you know, we're now in that time of the year when people start looking at the approaching new year and setting goals for it. Sometimes they even call them resolutions. In your judgment, why do so many New Year's resolutions fail?
Well, in the very simplest way to explain it is that there is no resolve underneath the resolution. You know, the word resolution implies that I am resolved to do something. But being resolved to do something is a very major emotional, psychological, and personal commitment that often doesn't undergird what people declare to be their New Year's resolutions. What they call a resolution on closer examination looks more like some wishful thinking, or it would surely be nice if I could, rather than resolution. When I think of the word revolution, I go back to a particular childhood memory. My dad was a rugged outdoorsman, one newspaper columnist who specialized in sports and outdoor life. Once described him in an article as a leathery outdoorsman. He was tough. He was gritty. He had more skill in the outdoors than anyone that I was ever around as a youngster, certainly. But one duck season, en route to a duck blind deep in the river bottoms of East Texas, he was driving his pickup at pretty high speed, not by highway standards, but by standards if you're plowing through underbrush and the backwoods, and came around a curve ready to hit a wooden bridge that went over across a slough that was flooded. As he came around the corner and started for that bridge, he suddenly realized it had been washed out. And because the road was so muddy and slick, he couldn't stop until the truck ran off into the slough and began to sink. So he hiked back out, got back to the house. He and I got in another truck to go rescue that one because all of his carpentry tools, and he was a carpenter by trade, were in that truck. And as we pulled up to the edge of the woods to go in, we met the game warden coming out from the same route that we would be taking in. And the game warden said to him, "Red, you can't get in there. You can't get in there. The road's too muddy. It's too slick. I've been in there with a four-wheel Jeep, and I can't get through." And Dad looked at him and he said, "Well, Warden, the basic difference between you and me is you don't have to get in there. I do." And sure enough, we got in there and rescued his tools. That, when someone says, "I've got a resolution to do something," I think, Dad understood resolution. So
right.
The part of the problem is, if we're going to have a New Year's resolution, we have to be honest with ourselves. Am I really resolved to do this, or is this just something that would really be great if I could pull it off? If it's more nearly the latter, odds are it's not going to see fruition over the course of the year. And we may have even given up on it before we're more than a few days, few weeks, certainly a few months into the year. So it's a difference between wanting to do something, thinking something would be nice to accomplish, and really having genuine goals that we have set and properly set that we are pursuing.
That's very important. I love that story. Thanks for sharing that with us. And now we know why New Year's resolutions fail.
We don't have to do
setting yourself up. Right. We don't have to do them. They don't, you know, when you do them and you expect everything to magically happen by the first week of January, and it never does.
Right. Right.
You know, some people do seem to set goals, and they do work toward them naturally. They don't, you know, put like this big monumental thing towards it like New Year's. But it's not true for everyone. Why do you find, Dr. Mike, that some people struggle with even setting the goals at all and then sticking to them?
Well, and there are two pieces to what you just asked. First, there are people who have difficulty setting goals, and then they're either they or a different class of people have trouble sticking with goals once they have set them. So let's sort of take it and look at them in those two parts. First of all, setting goals for some people is a challenge because they are more aware of what they don't want than what they want. I happen to have two coaching clients right now who are in that situation. They are not happy with their career where it is and where it's tending. They're not particularly crazy about the industry they're in because they see it as on a downward trajectory and probably going to disappear within the next 10 years or so. But they know they don't want to stay where they are. It's very difficult for them, though, to identify where they want to go. And so many times we go about setting goals because we're upset with something. Something is out of kilter in our life. We don't like what's going on, or we don't enjoy the association with the work colleagues we have, or we don't particularly find a lot of joy going to work at all every day because of the environment that's going on. And we have other things in life that have upset us. And those are the kinds of things that lead us to start saying, I'm going to do different, something different. And we start setting goals. But it's a lot easier to get clear on what we don't want than to get clarity on what it is we really want. And that, therefore, makes it difficult to set a goal unless you've got crisp, clear vision as to what it is that you want to accomplish, what you want to achieve. Now, there are people who have clarity on what they want, but they are people who really prefer options and the freedom to improvise, vastly prefer that over having structure. And as a result, goals to them sound restrictive. They sound confining. They're giving up the ability to improvise as they go along, to decide to do something different, to do something new. Now, you know, we can amend goals. We can amend directions. We can modify the plan. We can make changes as we're pursuing goals, but there are some people, when you start talking about goals and deadlines and measurable outcomes, they start saying, man, that feels restrictive. And so psychologically, there's a resistance to setting those goals. Now, once we get beyond whatever emotional or psychological reservations we have about setting the goals, then sticking with them is a different matter. Some people are better at sticking at goals, with goals, because quite simply they are more self-disciplined. And it's easy to just say that when people fail to pursue their goals, fail to stick with them, that it's because of poor self-discipline. And the fact of the matter is that is true, and many times it is, but there are other scenarios in which people have plenty of discipline as a rule, but they still don't stick with their goals. Some of it is that they don't have sufficient reinforcement. They haven't asked others to help them pursue the goal and to hold them accountable for the things they've committed to on the goal. They don't have an accountability circle of any sort. That's one of the reasons that when you read popular articles on goal setting, one of the things that will often be a bullet point is to share your goal with other people. Because once we tell people, this is my goal for next year, we feel a certain necessity to not embarrass ourselves by having them come back a few weeks later and say, how are you doing? And you say, well, I'm just not pursuing it at all. We have a self-serving, face-saving desire within us that once we begin to talk to people about what it is we're going to do, we feel a stronger enforcement inside to pursue it. But many people also need that reinforcement, that encouragement, that attaboy coming from people that they share their goals with. And those who are really self-disciplined, self-starters may not need that so much as other people. But without that reinforcement, they tend to lose the enthusiasm they have and the momentum they have built in accomplishing a goal. And then there are other people, and there are a lot of people in this who only become prompted to do something when the deadline is closing in on them. In fact, we call them deadline prompted. Many of them are very successful managers and executives, but they are generally seen as procrastinators. And the reason is that their energy, their creativity, their enthusiasm, the clarity of their thinking doesn't really crystallize until they're getting to the point that they've got to do it. Sort of like my dad going in to retrieve his tools. They have to get this done. And at that point, they have a tremendous amount of energy that they can expend toward accomplishing what they have been saying all along they wanted to do. But coming back to your question about New Year's resolutions earlier, many times those people will set a goal that by the end of the year, I want to boom. Well, that deadline is so far away that they are not prompted in the first, second, and third quarters to make serious progress toward that goal. So part of the challenge for people like that is to set milestones along the way that will incrementally move them toward the goal so that they are able to feel that reinforcement that comes from having a deadline that they're committed to meeting, and therefore their motivation fires off. So there are a lot of factors that go into why people don't stick with goals. I've only touched on a couple or three here. We could probably go quickly through a list of 10 or 12 if we spent the time doing it, because there are a lot of different reasons that people are not as effective at sticking with goals as intellectually they believe they are capable of being.
Well, we've talked about the New Year's resolutions failing. Let's expand maybe on some of those principal reasons that the goals do fail.
Well, one of the primary reasons that goals fail is that the goal itself was not explicit or precise enough. I said a while ago that people are much clearer about what they don't want than what they want. As you know from some of the conversations we've had in person and in these podcasts, I put a great emphasis on precision, using precise language, setting precise goals, because the more precise we can be, the clearer we communicate and the more distinctly we can see what it is that we need to do. That being said, our goals need to be precise and exact, and if they're not, we don't really have as much sense as might be helpful in knowing the degree to which we're making progress toward accomplishing the outcome we've said that we want. But even if we do have precise, explicit goals, one of the reasons they fail is because there's really not a strong, well-developed plan underneath it. Go back to New Year's resolutions. Probably one of the most common New Year's resolutions is, I'm going to lose weight. And so someone says, okay, my New Year's resolution is, I'm going to lose 20 pounds this year. I'm going to lose 30 pounds this year. Well, how are you going to do that? Well, I'm going to sign up for a membership in a health club. They think they've got a plan. But at this point, we don't know, A, when they're going to sign up, B, how many days a week they're going to go there, number three, whether they're going to try to do this on their own or spend the money to have a fitness coach who works with them. There's no real plan, although they think there is, because their plan is to sign up at a health club. But that's just a general approach. It's not really a plan. A plan is going to spell out in greater precision, in greater detail, what it is that we're going to do. Now, another issue is that the plan may be there, but it's not properly chunked and sequenced. That is to say, plans to be effectively executed need to be divided into chunks that are manageable, and those chunks need to be laid out in the most efficient sequence to get us from where we are today to where we want to be tomorrow. And the goal of joining a health club to lose 20 pounds is neither chunked nor sequenced, and there's a lot of work still to be done. Another reason goals fail, and this really is true of New Year's resolutions, I know people who go overboard on the New Year's resolution thing to the standpoint of, from the standpoint that they suddenly have four or five major New Year's resolutions that they're undertaking. There are simply too many, especially if they all start at the same time. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't have multiple New Year's resolutions. I've got several myself for next year that I hope will, in fact, be goals that I aggressively and continuously pursue. That's my design and desire. But I'm not going to try to start all of them in January when we have so many resolutions or goals that we all start all of them at once. It's hard to keep focus on them properly and in balance. And before long, we're paying more attention to some, not so much attention to others, and we start losing traction and momentum with the ones we're not paying attention to. That comes back to that sequencing I was talking about. So if I've got multiple resolutions for next year, one of the things I need to do is to say, okay, in the first quarter, this is what I'm going to work on. And once I get that established, then later in the year, come spring, come summer, come the third quarter, whatever, this is what I'm going to work on. And we've got a plan that is sequenced so that I'm working on a resolution or two or three at any given time, but I'm not trying to accomplish all of them in parallel and at the same time. That's a surefire formula for us failing. Well, we do the same thing with goals. I am constantly saying to my coaching clients and in my trainings on goal setting, don't set too many goals. Set the goals that are most critically important for the outcomes you want. Because if you set too many goals, we cannot stay properly focused on all of them to give them the optimal opportunity to succeed. In a quick summary, I would say that goals fail as much as anything because there's not an adequate plan underneath them, or the plan is not explicit and precise enough, or it's not properly chunked and sequenced, or there are too many start dates that, or in some cases end dates, that all hit at the same time, and we can't give the goal its appropriate focus and due.
Very important. Great advice, and succinctly described for our audience, as you usually do, which I think is fantastic. You know, in terms of management, how do leaders unite their people around a set of goals?
Unity implies that there is a strong motivation that people feel toward accomplishing whatever it is that unites them. So first of all, management needs to set goals that their people feel strongly about. Motivation comes out of our values, what I want, what I don't want. Or to put it another way, I'm not motivated to pursue something that is of no value to me. So if managers are going to unite their people around a goal, then they need to be working with their people in the setting of goals so that the people themselves are revealing what they are excited about, and the manager finds a way to channel that excitement into the achievement of the goals that are most important. So first of all, involving people in the dialogue and setting goals instead of simply announcing them or imposing them. Secondly, is keeping them before people all the time, continually talking about our goals. And if we have properly chunked and sequenced them, as I talked about a while ago, talking this month about where we need to be, what's the chunk we're working on now, what's the chunk that's going to follow it, how are we teeing up that follow-on chunk, where should we be right now, what are the mile markers we should be passing right now. Leaders, if they take the goals seriously, need to continually talk about them, and they need to celebrate the victories along the way. When we hit milestones, pause and celebrate them. Help people feel good about the progress they're making. There's nothing worse than having a long-term objective that we're working on, but we never really feel inside that we're making much progress because it seems at times we're just inching along. It's part of management's job to help people recognize, hey, we are making progress, and this is where we stand. Look where we were not that long ago. So anyway, it's an engagement with people that is extremely important if managers are going to unite their people around a set of goals.
That's very, very important for people to note. We hear a lot about also stretch goals. Do those really work, Dr. Mike? And what's some of the pitfalls that leaders should avoid in using them?
Well, I'm a firm believer in stretch goals. We don't reach something we never shoot for. And so looking at what we can easily do and then saying, with added effort, what is it that we could possibly do, which is really what stretch goals are about, is really a good incentive for us to tap into those deeper capabilities that we have as individuals or as a team or as a company, and discover resources within us that we didn't know we had and would not know we had that stretch goal not been held out there. But one of the things that I see often happening is that the stretch goal is so large that people immediately respond to it by saying, that's not a stretch goal. Hey, we're going to hit that goal. There's no way I meet that standard. You particularly see this in sales, where I've seen sales managers who give people a stretch goal, and when they hit that goal, instead of giving them a chance to catch their breath and relax, they just give them another goal that's even a bigger one. And people, therefore, feel that they're on this treadmill that they can never get off of, and it's going faster and faster and faster, because stretch goals, by their very definition, take something out of us. Let's celebrate that. Let's regroup. Let's regather. Then let's set another stretch goal, but let's recognize that laying stretch goals one right after another is a surefire way to burn people out, to lose their enthusiasm, and to destroy the morale within our organization.
Which definitely you don't want to have happen, so to try to avoid that. absolutely. Those are pitfalls. Next week, we're going to be talking about well-informed goals. Could you quickly maybe give us a little teaser, say a word about what you mean by that term, well-formed goals?
We've talked about several things that can go wrong in either the articulation of a goal or the execution of a goal as we've visited today. And many of those things that I talked about as failures in planning or failures in precision are the result of having goals, or may also be the contributor to having goals that are not well formed. There are about a half dozen criteria that are major criteria and a handful of lesser considerations that go into being sure that a goal is so well formed that it is easily communicated, that people easily embrace it, that it is engaging to the excitement and morale of our people, and that we are therefore more effective in maintaining momentum toward accomplishment of the goal. So what we'll be talking about are those elements that go into shaping those types of goals.
That is fantastic. Best ways that people can connect with you, a couple of different website opportunities, www.leaderperfect.com. That's leaderperfect.com, or www.hearmike.com. That's HearMike.com. Dr. Mike, thanks so much for joining us here on the show. Looking forward to your return coming up on December 12th at 2 p.m. Eastern, our regularly scheduled time. And it'll be a pleasure once again. Thanks for joining us and imparting all this wit and wisdom with our audience as you do so eloquently and so beautifully. And one more time, congratulations again on the number one in the business leadership category on Amazon.com for your incredible book.
Well, thank you. I'm very blessed to have been honored that way, and really enjoyed our time today, as I always do.
Absolutely. And the book, gang, is Leadership and the Power of Trust, the new bestseller. We thank Dr. Mike, and we thank all of you for joining us here on Close Up Radio. Jim Masters here. Stay tuned. We'll be back in 30 minutes with another fascinating guest on Close Up Radio just for you. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.